This is KWMR, Point Reyes Station. I'm Jane Mickelson from Bolinas. I listen to KWMR to hear unique local programming. In this land of locavores, I'm a local listener.
From the Big Bang to the Big Mac by Eric Schulman. Copyright 1999 to 2004 by Eric Schulman. Some rights reserved. Free to copy, distribute, display, and perform this work as long as you give the original author credit. First printing 1999. We are starting on page 71. The third installment of From the Big Bang to the Big Mac. The chapter is Glaciation, in which a thousand-year ice age begins. Let's get down to it. I'm Matt Gallagher. This is Turning Pages. This is my third installment in place of Amanda Eichstadt, who is normally your reader, and I'm having a great time. So, this is a lighthearted and interesting and a bit odd take on A Brief History of Time, originally by Stephen Hawking. And this is Eric Schulman's idea. Unfortunately, this PDF that I'm reading from is not a real PDF with real pages. I can't go to the page number that I want to because the page number on the page that the book was printed on is not the page number of the PDF. So here we are. 69,000 BC, the Earth, glaciation, in which a thousand-year ice age begins. And in other news, Mount Toba on the island of Sumatra erupted today. It put 200 cubic miles of ash into the atmosphere and was the largest volcanic eruption in over 400 million years. Wow! Now it's time for the weather with our humorous weather person, Dr. Dan. Thanks! The forecast for tonight is dark. Darkness will continue for the next several weeks as ash from the volcano covers about 20% of the planet, and temperatures will begin to drop. The temperature will be about 20 degrees lower than average for the next 6 years, and I'm forecasting that approximately three-quarters of all plants in the northern hemisphere won't survive. In addition, global snow will cover and reflect much of the sun's light, causing the worldwide ice age that will last 1,000 years and kill off all but a few thousand people. Back to you, Lisa. Thanks, Dr. Dan. Now, let's see how the global catastrophe is likely to affect our local sports teams. 38,000 BC, the Earth, innovation, in which advanced tools are widely used. Are you still using stone tools? Of course you are. Who isn't? After all, stone tools are reliable. You can trust them. They've been around for hundreds of thousands of years, but have you thought about what bone tools could do for you? That's right, bone tools. Bone is durable, but much easier to work with than stone. Your parents mostly scavenge, but you want to hunt? Then bone tools are right for you. Use bone to make deadly spearheads and harpoon tips. Spears with stone are okay, but spears with bone go all the way. Don't throw those stone tools away. Use them for making bone tools. Flint chisels can be used to make great spearheads out of antlers. Flint scrapers are very helpful in shaping bone and in processing hides. And think about all the things that can be done with flint blades. Bone tools and flint blades have proven reliability. Some folks have been using flint blades on and off for more than 200,000 years, and bone tools go back almost that far. But now is the time to switch, because bone tools and flint blades will satisfy the demands of your new lifestyle. Don't just use the same old stone tools your parents used. Think new, think bold, think bone. Paid for by the Aragonesian Bone Tool Advisory Council. And now, the inscription, 4000 BC, in which writing is invented. Sumerian history of the universe in 30 words or less. Lakmu and Lakamu, incarnation, Anshar and Kishar, creation, Enki and Ninkia, assignation, Marduk, maturation, Tiamat, confrontation, heaven and earth production, people construction, animal domestication, food surplus production, inscription, composition, extrapolation? 3000 BC, the earth, warring nations in which nations battle nation for resources. 50 ways to loot your neighbor. The problem is too much discontent, she said to me. The answer is easy if you take it logically. I'd like to help you do your duty as a marquis. There must be 50 ways to loot your neighbor. She said, it's not really my habit to intrude. Furthermore, I hope my meaning won't be lost or misconstrued. So I repeat myself at the risk of being crude. There must be 50 ways to loot your neighbor. 50 ways to loot your neighbor. Just put on the belt, celt. Make off with the boot, jute. Set fire to the cot, Scott. Then bring back the gold. Go kill and maim, Dane. Stop being humane. Hurt, wound, and stun, hun. Take all you can hold. She said, it grieves me that you would not expand, and I wish you'd reconsider following my plan. I said, I appreciate that, but you'll have no more talk about the 50 ways. She said, if that's your final word, I'll acquiesce. Furthermore, there is a plan that I'd like better, I confess. And then she killed me, took my land, and became marquise. There must be 50 ways to loot your neighbor. 50 ways to loot your neighbor. Just put on your belt, Celt. Make off with the loot, Jute. Set fire to the cot, Scott. Then bring back the gold. Go kill and maim, Dane. Stop being humane. Hurt, wound, and stun, hun. Take all you can hold. 22,000 BC, the Earth, empire creation and destruction, in which the first empire in human history comes and goes.
Dum-da-dum-dum. Dum-da-dum-dum-dum.
The story you are about to read is true. Only the university has been changed to protect our funding. This is the desert, also called Fertile Crescent. Now, there's nothing but sand as far as the eye can see, but underneath the sand lies evidence of ancient civilizations. That's where I come in. I'm an archaeologist. I carry a shovel.
Dum-da-dum-dum. Dum-da-dum-dum-dum. It was Monday, March 13th, 9:05 a.m. I was working off the National Science Foundation grant through the University of Michigan. The chair of the department is Professor Kelly. My partner is Dr. Frank Gannon. My name's Friday. How was your weekend, Frank?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good, Joe. I spend most of the time watching basketball. Bring!
Archaeology. Friday. Yeah. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. We'll get right on it. What's the matter, Joe? We've got a 203 on our hands, Frank. You mean an unexplained disappearance of the Akkadian Empire formed by Sargon in 2370 BC, which is at a peak stretched 800 miles from the Persian Gulf to the headwaters of the Euphrates River in present-day Turkey? Yeah, that's the one. Hard to believe. It's the world's first empire, and it ended for no apparent reason. Let's go check it out. Dum 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 dum. 7:17 a.m. After flying to the harbor plains in Syria, we spoke to Dr. Glasner. Glasner.
Ah, yes, the Akkadian Empire for 100 years between 2300 B.C. and 2200 B.C. Akkadian governors ruled cities all over the Fertile Crescent. Caravans of hundreds of donkeys traveled 12 hours a day and more to and from Armenia, and ships full of timber sailed to Egypt and returned with fish, flax, papyrus, alabaster, lentils, and gold.
And then what happened?
No one knows, Dr. Friday. Surely there are theories. All the usual. Overreaching leaders, faltering armies, overuse of farmland, but none of them really fit.
Mind if we look around?
Not at all. Be my guest.
Dum 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 dum. 4:21 p.m. After spending 12 years in field research, Frank and I got together to compare notes. What have you found?
It looks like the population in the north abandoned their homes and moved south into the cities, overtaxing water and food supplies and leading to urban chaos. But I still don't understand why.
Take a look at those northern soil samples for the period between 2300 and 2200 B.C.
Everything looks fine.
Now take a look at these soil samples from the following 300 years.
This soil has very few earthworm holes, but lots of wind-blown fine dust. It must have almost had no water in it. If the north dried out, then the wheat, barley, and sheep that provided the empire with wealth would have disappeared. Of course, climate change destroyed the Akkadian Empire. Should have been obvious from the start.
Dum da dum 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 da dum dum dum. The story you have just read is true. Only the university has been changed to protect our funding. Upon arrival back in Ann Arbor, Friday and Jones wrote up their results and submitted a series of papers to the American Journal of Archaeology. Explaining the disappearance of the Akkadian Empire is rewardable by not less than tenure and not more than promotion to full professor. Dum da dum dum, dum da dum dum dum. 1700 BC, the Earth, civilization in which many and sundry events occur.
Good morning, class, and welcome back to History of the World. World History. I hope that you've studied your textbook well over the break, because we're having an oral pop quiz today on, let's see, how about years ending in 17 since 1700 BC. Okay, David, what happened in 917 BC? King Rehoboam the first of Judah died, and he was the son of King Solomon. And because of his misrule, the northern tribes broke away from Jerusalem and established the kingdom of Israel. For some reason, the northern tribes didn't particularly want to be scourged with scorpions by Rehoboam,
That's 1 Kings 12:14. Indeed. Melissa, what happened in 217 BC? Let's see, that was the Second Punic War. Wasn't that the year the Hannibal defeated the main Roman army at Lake Trasimeno? By this time, all his elephants had perished, and despite his military victories, his home of Carthage failed to give him sufficient support. In the end, he could never muster enough strength to assault Rome itself in the 15 years that his army ravaged Italy. He might have done better had he brought extra warm weather gear for the elephants. Yes, they did get cold in the snow, don't they? Elizabeth, what happened in 517 AD? 517. Yes, that was when Emperor Wu Ti became a Buddhist and introduced Buddhism to central China. Shortly thereafter, he met the first patriarch of Zen Buddhism. When asked by the emperor, "What is the essence of Buddhism?" the Zen master replied, "No essence whatsoever." That pretty much says it all. Andrew, what happened in 1417 AD? Well, that was when the Council of Constance elected Pope Martin V, ending the Great Schism. In 1378, the cardinals had elected Urban VI as pope, but within 4 months they had declared that election null and void and elected Clement VII instead, creating two lines of popes. By 1409, after three new popes in one line and one new pope in the other, the popes were Gregory XII and Benedict XIII. The Council of Pisa then met and declared Alexander V to be pope. He soon died and was replaced by John XXIII, but Gregory XII and Benedict XIII refused to step down. So now there were three popes. It wasn't until the Council of Constance that Gregory XII resigned and the two other popes were deposed. 40 years is certainly a long time to have a plethora of popes. Shelley, can you tell me what happened in 1517 A.D.? Of course. That was the year Martin Luther felt compelled to protest the church's granting of indulgences. He nailed his 95 Theses to the church door in Wittenberg and started down the path that would lead to the Protestant Reformation and eventually to Garrison Keillor. Indeed, Dale, 1717 A.D. 1717. Oh, yeah, that was the year that Yoshimune became the eighth shogun of the Tokugawa shogunate. Only 33 when he became shogun, he was known as one of the wisest rulers in the history of Japan. He carried out many reforms and encouraged the martial arts and education, right? I'm sorry, Dale. Your facts about Yoshimune are correct, but he became shogun in 1716, not 1717. How many times do I have to tell you to read the text before class? Try to do better next time. I see that class is about over for today. Tomorrow we are going to be discussing the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. Please try to read it tonight. Okay, Dale? AD, the Earth. Constitution, in which Constitution is written. Ring. Thank you for calling Constitution Hut. Can you hold, please? Thanks for waiting. Can I take your order? Okay, that's one Constitution to be delivered to General... Mr. Washington and the Philadelphia Convention to revise the Articles of Confederation. What would you like your convention like in the Constitution, Mr. Washington? Bicameral legislature? Sure, we can do that. Ooh, direct election of the House of Representatives. Okay. Senators chosen by state legislatures. Sure you don't want direct election of senators? Okay. Okay, never mind. What else? Oh, the executive branch will be headed by a president, whose term will be 4 years. President and vice president to be elected by electors from each state. Okay. And chosen in a fashion approved by the state legislature. You sure about that electors idea? Okay. The president will be the person who receives most electoral votes, and the vice president will be the person who receives the second largest number of electoral votes. Now, this really seems like a bad idea to me. What if they have completely opposing views on important issues? What if, I know you could have chosen to call Constitution King. Yes, I know that their advertising says that their special orders don't upset them. Oh, very well. What else? Okay. Judicial power to the Supreme Court. Okay. New states admitted to the Union by Congress. Right. Constitution can be amended by Congress and the states. Good idea, that. What else? No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust. Okay. 9 states required to ratify. Will that be all? Sure you don't want any extra rights in there? Well, give us a call if you change your mind. Okay. We'll fill in the details and get this to you by September 17th. Thank you for choosing Constitution Hut. 1800 AD, the Earth. Industrialization, in which automated manufacturing and agriculture revolutionized the world. Industry. When you have found yourself with too few farmhands, Cy McCormick showed you the mechanical reaper, Industry. And when you needed uniforms, Isaac Singer showed you what to do using a sewing machine. Industry, industry, industry. Lots of new inventions, industry. After Hargrave's spinning Jenny came and we had the factory, Arkwright knew the answer, industry. For though the Luddites break looms, there is still a chance that they will see they can get jobs in industry. Industry, 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 yeah, industry. They can all get jobs in industry. When Richard Sears figured out conveyor belts for assembly, one more step down the path, industry. Then Henry Ford studied the process and he made the Model T. Motor cars for workers. Industry, 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 industry. Lots of new inventions. Industry, 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 yeah, industry. They can all get jobs in industry. 1914 A.D., world conflagrations in which most of the world is at war. Good evening and welcome to World at War, the game show that lets you decide the fate of the world. Our first contestant is Colonel Dragutin Dimitrijevic of Serbia. Colonel? It's June of 1914, and you want to ensure Serbia's independence from Austria-Hungary. What should you do? Give weapons to Bosnian youths who intend to assassinate Austro-Hungarian Archduke Ferdinand in Sarajevo. No, I'm sorry. That would result in Austria, Germany, and Bulgaria declaring war on Serbia. The defeat of the Serbian army, your execution for treason, and the incorporation of Serbia into Yugoslavia after World War I. Next up, we have Count Alfred von Schlieffen of Germany. Count von Schlieffen, what should Germany do when faced with the prospect of world war with both Russia and France? Bypass the French armies by attacking through neutral Belgium, crush the enemy's flanks, and complete the destruction by attack from the rear. France will be defeated in 39 days before Russia has a chance to mobilize. A good try, but French and British armies would be able to retreat in good order to counterattack near the Marne River and establish a firm defense. In addition, this plan would require Germany to attack France as soon as Russia mobilized, regardless of whether it was a strategically good time to do so. Now we have Premier Antonio Salandra of Italy. Premier Salandra, the Great War has started and Italy has declared itself neutral. What should Italy do next?
A talk with both sides to get the best deal and then attack for territorial gain.
No, Premier, that's quite a poor idea. Italy would be unable to win any decisive battles, would suffer heavy casualties, and would gain little or no territory. Let's see if Kaiser Wilhelm II of Germany can do better. It's 1917, and the war hasn't been going well, in part due to American supplies being shipped to the Allies. What should you do?
Authorize unrestricted submarine warfare against American ships and hope that the war can be won before the United States can mobilize.
Sorry, Kaiser. But you built too many battleships when you should have been building submarines. Your submarine warfare would not cripple the Allied cause, but it would draw America into the war and lead to a German defeat. Next, we have a team of contestants. President Wilson of the United States, Prime Minister Lloyd George of Britain, and Premier Georges Clemenceau of France. Gentlemen, Germany has been defeated and a treaty to end the war must be drafted. What should the treaty require?
It should let Germany have most of its territory, restrict it to having a small army and navy and no air force, and force it to pay reparations to the Allied countries.
I'm afraid not. That would worsen the economic situation in Germany and increase nationalist feelings in the country while leaving it with an enormous potential for military buildup, which could lead directly to future German aggression. Our contestants don't seem to be having much luck today. Let's see if British Member of Parliament Winston Churchill can do any better. Mr. Churchill, it is the early 1930s and nationalism is on the rise in India. The Labour government wishes to make concessions, as do many in your own Conservative Party. What should you do?
Speak out strongly against Indian nationalism and resign from the Conservative shadow cabinet if my demands aren't met.
Very poor choice, Mr. Churchill. Not only is an independent India destined to happen, but such an action on your part would politically isolate you at a time when England might have to remain strong in the face of a dictator in, for example, Germany. Now, let's hear from the Austrian Chancellor Engelbert Dollfuss. Chancellor Dollfuss, the year is 1934, and many Austrians would like to see a union of Austria with Nazi Germany. Italian Premier Benito Mussolini says that he would support Austrian independence only if socialist parties are banned from politics. What should you do?
Ban the Communist and Social Democratic parties.
No bad move, Chancellor. That would destroy the one political force with the potential to resist the Nazis. You should probably be murdered by Austrian Nazis, and although Mussolini would protect Austria for a few years, it would inevitably fall to the Nazis and be absorbed by Germany. We are going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with a briefer history of time from the Big Bang to the Big Mac from Eric Schulman. I'm Matt Gallagher, your reader on Turning Pages, and this is KWMR.
Hello, I am Professor Cosmo, NKWMR in Point Reyes Station.
Are you in KWMR's Calendar Club? Get in with the in crowd and support homegrown watershed radio starting at just $10 a month. The giving is the getting, and the benefit reaches a whole community. Visit kwmr.org.
We return now, reading A Briefer History of Time. I'm on page 96, the bottom, and we're in World War I to II Histria. Histria. It's a new place to live. Let's see if that's up. Okay. Here we go. Dollfuss, and that was a bad move. Chancellor, yes, it would fail, inevitably fall to the Nazis and be absorbed by Germany. Next, we have the chief of France, French Army General Staff, General Maurice Gamelin. General Gamelin, it is 1940 and the German attack on France is inevitable. What are your defense plans?
Put our most of our forces on the Belgian border, some along a Maginot Line, and very few in the wooded Ardennes region, and of course in impassable for the German tank offensive. If the Germans break through our lines, they will head towards Paris, and our army will come at them from the rear and catch them in a pincher. Bzzz.
Well, that all sounds good in principle, but if you do that, the Germans would attack through the lightly defended Ardennes and turn towards the sea, cutting off your forces and throwing your armies into confusion, leading to a complete German victory over France within 6 weeks. It's time to hear from Soviet General Secretary Joseph Stalin. The year is 1941, and you have been warned that Germany is about to break the 1939 Nazi-Soviet non-aggression pact. What should you do?
Denounce the information as the Allied plot and refuse to make military preparations since this might provoke the Germans.
Bzzzt. I'm sorry, but Germany is preparing to attack. You, with more than 2 million men, and your lack of preparation would lead to the German capture of most European Russia, as well as millions of Russian troops taken prisoner. Now we have with us Premier Fumimaro Konoye. Your foreign minister is urging you to sign the Three Power Pact with Germany and Italy. What should you do? Sign the pact will convince the United States not to involve itself in Asia for fear of becoming involved in World War. No, Premier Konoye, signing this pact would only strengthen American resolve and lead to increased U.S. aid to China and an inevitable war with Japan when America would rather be dealing with Germany. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President of the United States, is next. President Roosevelt, it is November of 1941, and the U.S. Navy has intercepted messages from Tokyo to the Japanese embassy in Washington indicating that if a diplomatic agreement is not reached between the United States and Japan by November 29th, then things are automatically going to happen. Recall that earlier in the year, the U.S. ambassador to Japan sent a message to the State Department indicating that the Japanese military forces planned, in the event of trouble with the United States, to attempt a surprise mass attack on Pearl Harbor using all their military facilities. What should you do?
continue diplomatic negotiations with the Japanese in an attempt to find a compromise acceptable to both sides, and conclude that the probability of the Japanese surprise attack on Pearl Harbor is very small.
I'm sorry, President Roosevelt, but if you follow that course of action, then on November 25th, a Japanese task force would set sail for Hawaii, and in the early morning of December 7th, the Japanese would send 360 carrier-based planes to destroy two battleships, heavily damage three more, inflict some damage on 16 other ships, damage or destroy 200 planes, and kill more than 2,000 soldiers and sailors at Pearl Harbor. Our last contestant is Reich Chancellor Adolf Hitler of Germany. The Japanese have just attacked Pearl Harbor. What should you do?
Declare war on America and order full-scale U-boat attack on American vessels supplying Britain.
No, Chancellor, that's not a good idea. Your submarine forces would not be up to the task. Had the resources you put into battleships gone into submarines instead, this might have worked. But as it is, Britain would be able to survive, and the economic and military might of the United States would be brought to bear against you, leading to your defeat. I'm afraid that none of our contestants have correctly answered any questions, so the grand prize of world domination will not be awarded this time around. Tune in next time for World at War to see if one of our new contestants can win the grand prize. Unclassified, 1945 AD, the Earth. Fission explosions in which humans develop nuclear weapons. This document contains 4 pages. This is copy 2998 of 4803. What to do if you want a fission explosion? 1. Get someone to set off an atomic bomb. Convince one or more of the countries that have atomic weapons to detonate one where and when you like. This would probably be difficult to do unless you happen to want a fission explosion on a small island in the Pacific, in a desert, or near a border between two countries who have recently announced that they have nuclear weapons. 2. Buy an atomic bomb. One or more of the countries that have atomic weapons may be willing to part with a few for the right price. Build an atomic bomb. You could use uranium, in particular uranium-235, but this is difficult to obtain since more than 99% of uranium is uranium-238, which isn't suitable for use as an active material in bombs. Try using plutonium instead. You will need, redacted, pounds of either weapon-grade plutonium, 90% plutonium-239, 10% plutonium-240, or reactor-grade plutonium, 50% plutonium-239, 20% plutonium-241, 30% plutonium-240. Although the weapons-grade device will reliably release, redacted, kilotons of energy, the reactor-grade device will have a less predictable yield of between redacted and redacted kilotons. Despite this disadvantage, you will probably have a much easier time obtaining the reactor-grade plutonium. First, assemble a redacted centimeter radius sphere of beryllium surrounded by a redacted millimeter thick layer of gold and redacted polonium. Construct a spherical shell around this sphere with a redacted wedge-shaped grooves on the inside of the shell. The grooves should be covered by a redacted millimeter thick layer of gold and a redacted of polonium. Then make redacted identical plutonium wedges and assemble them into a soccer ball shape surrounding the spherical shell. Put conventional explosives around the plutonium shell and a redacted centimeter-thick shell of uranium-238 around the explosives. Finally, it would be good to have a lead shell around the whole thing to cut down on the radiation coming from the plutonium and uranium before the bomb is detonated. To activate the bomb, detonate all of the conventional explosives simultaneously within redacted millionths of a second. This can be accomplished by redacted, 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 redacted. The plutonium wedges will be forced together into a sphere, and the shock will break the beryllium shell along the grooves, exposing the polonium. Polonium is radioactive and emits helium nuclei. When beryllium absorbs helium nuclei, it emits neutrons. When a plutonium atom absorbs a neutron, it splits into two smaller atoms, for example, strontium and barium, which releases energy and several more neutrons. These neutrons each go on to split other plutonium atoms, which emit more energy and neutrons. Since uranium-238 is a very good reflector of neutrons, any neutrons that escape from the plutonium sphere will be bounced back by the uranium shell. The chain reaction continues until between redacted percent and redacted percent of the plutonium atoms have been split, at which point so much energy has been released that the bomb and much of the surrounding countryside is vaporized. 4. Just say no. The Surgeon General has determined that fission explosions may be hazardous for your health. 1945 AD. Computerization, in which computers are developed. Syslog D 1.3 to 3 restart. Klog D 1.3 to 3 log source. Slash proc KMSG started. Cannot find map file. Loaded one symbol from one module. Console 16-point font. 400 scans. PCI BIOS init. BIOS 32 service directory structure at hexadecimal 000FD800. Calibrating delay loop. OK. 39.73. BOGO MIPS. VFS. Disk quotas version. D quote. 5.60 initialized. TTYO 0, 03 Foxtrot 8, IRQ set to 4, is at 1655 amps. PS2 auxiliary point, device detected, driver installed. IDE 0, IRQ 14, IDE 1 on IRQ 15. MD driver, max MD dev 4, max real 8. SCSI 0 host, SCSI detected total. Partition check, HDA, HDA1, HDA2, HDA3, HDA4, detected SB, 413, OK, 220, installed. Press a program key to continue. Sorry, wrong key. System going down immediately. No more processes at run level 0. System halted. 1957 AD, the solar system, space exploration in which humans begin to explore outer space.
We chose to go to the moon. We chose to go to the moon this decade and do other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one we are willing to accept and one we are willing to postpone, and we are unwilling to postpone, and one which we intend to win. John F. Kennedy, 35th President of the United States. It's time for the human race to enter the solar system. J. Danforth Quayle, 44th President, Vice President of the United States.
On October 4th, 1957, the Soviet Union launched Sputnik 1, the first artificial satellite. First artificial object in space may be have been launched several months earlier by accident when a steel plate was left covering a 500-foot deep hole during a nuclear test. Data from high-speed cameras suggested that the velocity of the plate was more than 40 miles per second right after the nuclear blast. The velocity is high enough for the plate, if survived the passage through the atmosphere, to have escaped not only from the Earth, but also from the solar system. The first American satellite, Explorer 1, was launched on January 31, 1958, and the space race was on. On April 12, 1961, Yuri Gagarin became the first human in space, making a one-orbit flight. John Glenn did three orbits on February 20, 1962. Hundreds of people and thousands of satellites have followed these pioneers into Earth orbit. The satellites study the Earth, transmit telephone calls between continents, make observations of the universe, and allow anyone in the world with a satellite dish and a descrambler to watch soap operas and dirty movies. Spacecraft has been sent to study the Moon, the Sun, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and comets and asteroids. Probes have landed on the Moon, Venus, and Mars, and one has descended into the upper atmosphere of Jupiter. See the table on the following pages. What will we do next? Will we complete the space station and start building solar power satellites to capture energy from sunlight and beam it down to Earth in order to decrease or eliminate the need to burn fossil fuels for electricity? Will we harvest nearby asteroids? An asteroid 6 miles on a side would satisfy the current world demand for aluminum, chromium, and gold for 20 to 30,000 years. At current prices, the gold alone in such an asteroid would be worth about $60 trillion. Will we invest in a program to detect and divert potentially catastrophic comets and asteroids so that we can avoid the fate of poor Shelley Shrew? Such impacts occur on the Earth every 100 million years or so, and they are quite capable of completely destroying human civilization. It is possible that life on planet like Earth will keep mutating and evolving until it develops a species intelligent enough to invest in a program to detect and divert potentially catastrophic comets and asteroids. Remember the wise words of the former Vice President of the United States. If we do not succeed, then we run the risk of failure. And now a page of space missions to other worlds. Quite a few. March 3rd, 1959, Pioneer 4, lunar flyby, first lunar flyby. September 15th, 1959, Luna 2, lunar hard landing, first image of lunar far side. October 4th, 1959, Luna 3, lunar flyby. February 12, 1961, Venera 1, Venus flyby, first Venus flyby. January 26, 1962, Ranger 3, lunar flyby. April 23, 62, Ranger 4, lunar hard landing. October 18, 1962, Ranger 5, lunar flyby. December 14, 1962, Mariner 2, Venus flyby. April 2, 1963, Luna 4, lunar orbit. January 30th, 1964, Ranger 6, lunar hard landing. April 2nd, 1964, Zond 1, Venus flyby. June 28th, 1964, Ranger 7, lunar hard landing. February 17th, 1965, Ranger 8, lunar hard landing. March 21st, 1965, Ranger 9, lunar hard landing. May 9th, 1965, Luna 5, lunar hard landing, failed soft landing. June 8th, 1965, Luna 6, lunar flyby, failed soft landing. July 14th, 1965, Mariner 4, Mars flyby, first close-up photos of Mars. October 4th, 1965, Luna 7, lunar hard landing, failed soft landing. November 12, 1965, Venera 2, Venus flyby, communications failure. November 16, 1965, Venera 3, Venus hard landing, communications failure. December 3, 1965, Luna 8, Luna hard landing, failed soft landing. December 16, 1965, Pioneer 6, solar orbit. February 3, 1966, Luna 9, lunar soft landing, first soft landing on the moon. March 31, 1966, Luna 10, lunar orbit. April 30, 1966, Surveyor 1, lunar soft landing. August 10, 1966, Lunar Orbiter 1, lunar orbit. August 17, 1966, Pioneer 7, solar orbit. August 24th, 1966, Luna 11, lunar orbit. September 20th, 1966, Surveyor 2, lunar hard landing, failed soft landing. October 22nd, 1966, Luna 12, lunar orbit. November 6, 1966, Lunar Orbiter 2, lunar orbit. December 21st, 1966, Luna 13, lunar soft landing. February 5th, 1967, Luna Orbiter, lunar orbit 2. April 17th, 1967, Surveyor 3, lunar soft landing. May 4th, 67, Lunar Orbiter 4, lunar orbit. July 14th, 1967, Surveyor 4, lunar hard landing, failed soft landing. July 19th, 1967, Explorer 35, lunar orbit. August 1st, 1967, Lunar Orbiter 5, lunar orbit. September 8th, 1967, Surveyor 5, lunar soft landing. October 18th, 1967, Venera 4, Venus atmospheric probe. October 19th, 67, Mariner 5, Venus flyby. November 7th, 1967, Surveyor 6, lunar soft landing. December 13th, 1967, Pioneer 8, solar orbit. January 7th, 1968, Surveyor 7, lunar soft landing. April 7th, 1968, Luna 14, lunar orbit. September 14th, 1968, Zond 5, lunar flyby. November 8th, 1968, Pioneer 9, solar orbit. November 10th, 1968, Zond 6, lunar flyby. December 21st, 1968, Apollo 8, lunar orbit, three crew members in orbiter. May 16th, 1969, Venera 5, Venus atmospheric probe. May 17th, 1969, Venera 6, Venus atmospheric probe. May 18th, 1969, Apollo 10, lunar orbit, three crew members in orbiter. July 13th, 1969, Luna 15, lunar hard landing, failed soft landing. July 20th, 1969, Apollo 11, lunar soft landing, first people land on the moon. July 31st, 69, Mariner 6, Mars flyby. November 19th, 69, Apollo 12, lunar soft landing, two crew members in lander. April 11th, 1970, Apollo 13, lunar flyby, failed soft landing. August 5th, 1969, Mariner 7, Mars flyby. September 12th, 1970, Luna 16, lunar soft landing, sample return. November 10th, 1970, Luna 17, lunar soft landing, included automated rover. December 15th, 1970, Venera 7, Venus soft landing, first soft landing on another planet. February 5th, 1971, Apollo 14, lunar soft landing, two crew members in lander. July 30th, 1971, Apollo 15, lunar soft landing, two crew members plus rover in lander. September 7th, 2nd, 1971, Luna 19, lunar orbit. November 13th, 71, Mariner 9, Mars orbit. November 27th, 1971, Mars 2, Mars orbit. November 27th, 1971, Mars 2, Mars hard landing, failed soft landing. December 2nd, 1971, Mars 3, Mars orbit. December 2nd, 1971, Mars 3, Mars soft landing, first soft landing on Mars. February 14th, 72, Luna 20, lunar soft landing, sample return. April 21st, 72, Apollo 16, lunar soft landing, two crew members plus rover in lander. July 22nd, 72, Venera 8, Venus soft landing, December 7th, 1972, Apollo 17 lunar soft landing, two crew members plus rover in lander. January 8th, 73, Luna 21 lunar soft landing included automated rover. June 10th, 1973, Explorer 49 lunar orbit. December 1st, 1973, Pioneer 10 Jupiter flyby, first flyby of Jupiter. February 2nd, 1974, Mars 5 Mars orbit. February 5th, 74, Mariner 10, Venus flyby. There are a lot more. These are all of our space programs. I would like to excise these or perhaps pre-record them and go faster. This is on page 108. We have a few minutes more, and we can just go to the end up to the last of the dates on the list up to the publishing of this, because I believe it's supposed to be glanced at, but here we go. This is the last bit of what we did. December 2nd, 1995, SOHO, solar orbit. December 2nd, 1995, Galileo, Jupiter orbit, first Jupiter orbit. December 7th, 1997, NEAR, Matilda flyby, asteroid flyby. July 4th, 1997, Mars Pathfinder, Mars soft landing, included automated rover. September 11th, 1997, Mars Global Surveyor, Mars orbit. January 11th, 1998, Lunar Prospector, lunar orbit. July 29th, 1999, Deep Space One, Braille flyby, asteroid flyby. September 23rd, 1999, Mars Climate Orbiter, Mars Atmospheric Entry, failed orbit. December 3rd, 1999, Mars Polar Lander, Mars Hard Landing, failed soft landing. October 24th, 2001, 2001 Mars Odyssey, Mars orbit. December 14th, 2003, Nozomi, Mars flyby, failed orbit. December 25th, 2003, Beagle 2, Mars hard landing, failed soft landing. December 25th, 2003, Beagle 2, January 2nd, 2004, Stardust, Comet P, Wild 2, first comet sample return attempt. January 4th, 2004, Spirit, Mars rover. January 25th, 2004, Opportunity, Mars rover. 1960, the Earth, population explosion, in which the human population of the Earth increases at a very rapid pace. With historical global population data. In B.C., 10,000, 4 million people. In 4,000 B.C., 7 million people. 2,000 B.C., 27 million people. 500 B.C., 100 million people. A.D., first year, 170 million. 500 A.D., 190 million, 600 AD, 200 million, 700 AD, 210 million, 800, 220 million, 900, 240 million, 1000 AD, 265, 1100, 320 million, 1200 AD, 360 million, 1300 AD, 360 million, 1400 with 374 million, 1500 with 425 million, 1600 AD with 545 million, 1700 AD with 610 million, 1750, 810 million, 1800, 900 million, 1850, 1.2 billion, 1900, 1.6 billion, 1930, 2.07 billion, 1950, 2,555 million. 1955, 2,780 million. 1960, 3,040 million. 1965, 3.3 billion. 1970, 3,708 million. 1975, 4,087 million. 1980, 4,454 million, 1985, 4,850,000,000 1990, 5,276,000,000 1995, 5,686,000,000 people 1998, 5,924,000,000 2001, 6.1 billion, 2004, 6.3 billion people on the planet. We're on page 112 of From the Big Bang to the Big Mac by Eric Schulman. I am Matt Gallagher. I will be back next Monday, and we will continue. Thank you so much for listening.
This is KWMR.